Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, after a billion years...
Four and a half billion years
punching through a wall of... Well, not diamond, but everyone calls it diamond. It's back, we're back, it's on the Time Lash, and this is our Christmas special. I'm Ben, if you remember that far back, faithful listeners. And with me, as always...
is the distant memory of Mark Donaldson. Joining us, well, we've had some problems here and there. We worked our friend Lee from the Polar Spots come along. He's unable to make it. We worked Richie from I Hate Doctor Who. This is not to make our guest feel bad that he's the third choice.
This sounds exactly like we just found you at a bus stop.
But we have the glass avatar of our good friend John Melville with us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, chaps.
He's thrilled to be here, listeners.
Well, after that introduction, there were some tourists outside, I'm sure they'd be happy to come to the show.
I did ask them before.
Because, yes, I guess the tourists, where are we? We're not where, well, I was going to say where we've recorded the previous episodes, but at this point, you haven't heard to the previous episodes. One thing led to another, and we've been on a bit of a hiatus.
Which I'm quite sad about, because I'm a regular listener. And I just keep waiting for that episode to appear in my
I feel really bad about insulting you now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're only doing this because Chris Chibnall can't take over doing on the Time Lash for another couple of months yet. But yes, we're recording this back in the spiritual home and, I guess, now actual home of On the Time Lash is back in Edinburgh. And it's our Christmas special. We're going to be talking about... well, I guess not just the episode Twice Upon a Time, but also the Moffat era, the Peter Capaldi era.
We discussed his first Christmas special as we've just watched his last, and then look to the future, as you do at New Year.
Yes, because we're pairing it up with a Christmas carol.
We are indeed. But first, lads, I've got some presents, because it's Christmas. Ooh. But I don't know what's best for each of you, so I'm going to do like a little Christmas lucky dip. I mean, those aren't moving. They're quite solid packages, so they're not moving.
Well, yeah.
Stick my hand in your sack and...
Ooh. Well, Ben, you get that one.
Okay.
Because there was a third parcel.
Yeah.
Oh. Right. Okay. Because there was supposed to be three of us, I got three.
Okay.
So this is the star prize.
Okay.
Now, what I thought I'd do...
Yeah, okay, so Mark, describe each of these packages for our listeners.
So, you're going to open them.
Well, so these are certainly... Okay, so let me just... I didn't get anyone any presents. Sorry, guys. And I thought...
Well, these were stuff that I found in the attic this morning.
Oh, okay.
That would be too.
Thank you very much.
So, Ben has quite a thin, wide package that maybe... whereas John's package is more boxy and compact. I feel I should edit in some swanny whistles.
You've been watching those carry on repeats on ITV.
Sure have, mate.
But the third parcel I thought would be fun is when we get to a Christmas carol, whoever gets closest to the score of the first five decades poll wins the star prize.
Okay.
So this is so Marsh has given us these packages neatly, very like neatly wrapped with paper saying ho 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 on it. Would you want to go first?
Thank you. I'll go first.
I just want to judge my present up against yours.
We'll just do the traditional, give it a shake, see if we can.
There's a particular vintage to all of these gifts. So that's my clue.
Okay.
Oh, it almost feels like a box set, a DVD box set.
Oh, you're going to be so disappointed.
I'm not. It's not.
What is it?
Classic era, New Who, Chris Eccleston and Billy Piper. It's like a file of facts.
It's a fun fact. To go with series one of Doctor Who. We don't mean a William Hartnell.
So Christmas Day 2005, I basically got all the Christopher Eccleston branded Doctor Who shit you could possibly throw at somebody. So I thought, you're a busy man, John. You've got to...
This is true.
You can use that to plan your busy life.
Let me open mine now that my expectations are...
There's a little quiz here. What is the Doctor's multifunctional tool called?
Wait a minute.
Is it A, the cosmic crystal, B, the dynamic drill, or C, the sonic screwdriver?
The dynamic drill.
I like the cosmic crystal.
Alien race attempts to take over the British government? I think they succeeded, didn't they? If you look at the current British government. Whoa.
Same politics there. How far we've come in 12 years.
Right, Davros, calm down.
Anyway, it's your turn.
All right, let's get back.
Thank you, Mark.
That's quite all right.
I'll treasure this.
Uh-oh. Let me slide it out here. a stick Doctor Who Series 1 sticker guide. What does a sticker guide mean?
Like I said, a very particular vintage to the these Christmas presents.
Oh, I see. So it's not like a Panini album.
No, it's not.
Where you have the album, then you buy the stickers.
So you've got the stickers there already, Ben.
The stickers are in a little pullout at the centre of the album.
Look, there's nothing worse, isn't there? When somebody gives you a present, and then there's extra stuff that you then have to spend your own money on.
That's true. That's
not this time, Ben. Stickers are already there.
I've got stickers of mine as well.
Oh, there we go.
Let's see. Any of the same?
They must have had the photo shoot they did for that.
It must have been a very short photo shoot.
There's quite a lot of photos of Eccleston, but all from that one shoot.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So for instance, there is the two of them in front of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But you've got something similar, but slightly different. It's more an action shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they must have just hammered through about a billion photos.
That was just the only shot shoot they did, I would think.
Oh my God, we're looking through these like it's our own photo albums of us as children.
It's history, isn't it?
Like it's our own kids or something.
Oh, there's Mickey.
Do you remember when Doctor Who was good, guys? Eh? Thank you very
much.
That's
all right. That's okay. I thought some Christmas past, as we discussed Christmas present.
Okay, so what I can only imagine is, because the other parcel does look like a figure. It looks like a... Is it... And fans of On the Time Lash will know...
It's not what you think it is,
Is it not Faceless Grandma?
It's not Faceless Grandma. Exactly not Faceless Grandma.
Is it Bottom Vogel?
And it's not Destroyed Cassandra either, but it is...
Oh, it's not... It's not like loads of tiny adipose, is it? Because we've done this before, we've talked about the worst figures that the branding allowed to happen. Or is it not? Is
ostensibly,
it not
it's actually quite a good figure.
Yeah.
It's just in terms of how the thing is now thought of.
Okay, is it?
Like, we'll get to that.
I want to know, is it Branigan? Is it Ardlo Hanlon?
Just have a see.
Alright, okay, well, sure, okay. Alright, guys. Here we are, though, but we've had our presents, we've had our argument, and now it's time, it's 5:30, and it's time for Twice Upon a Time. We had a small text conversation about this. I don't think the few things that we did discuss that we are in disagreement. I don't know about you, John. Well, tell you what, John. Johnny Baby. Johnny Sausage. Christmas John.
I prefer Johnster.
Do you want to kick us off? I guess just asking the question, how did you feel about it, is such a large introduction, but I guess it's a place to start. Initial thoughts.
Well, my thoughts before I went into it were that I was probably going to be disappointed, only because I'm usually disappointed with the Christmas specials. So that was a really nice way to go into it, you know, positive.
Yeah, he's presented his Doctor Who fan credentials.
Yes. I enjoyed up to a point. I suppose I'm at this stage with Doctor Who, and I think the Christmas special kind of brought it home even more, that I, on one hand, I watch Doctor Who as a fan, and on the other hand, I think of Doctor Who as a programme for everybody.
Yeah.
And I was watching Doctor Who in a room with three other people who aren't big Doctor Who fans, and I sort of forced them to watch it.
Okay. Did you know them, or were they...
My girlfriend and her sister and her mum, and... Not really, just nobody knew what was going on, and I sort of didn't really know much because of course the plot was unfolding, but you know, when it came up with 709 episodes previously, admittedly I did quite enjoy that. I thought that's quite nice.
Yeah.
Not often that you get, what other series can really do that, so that was nice, but at the same time, as much as I kind of enjoyed seeing some of the references to the past, I was thinking, who, does anyone understand what's going on here if you're not a fan? So.
Yeah.
That's something that I think is really bothered me with Doctor Who for a while now. And I kind of, looking back at these lovely photos here of Christopher Eccleston and Rose, you know, those were the days when there wasn't really a backstory. It was kind of, they got rid of all that stuff and gradually let the backstory and the history and Gallifrey and things appear. And that's kind of all just out the window now, and it's all just far too much fan wank.
I agree.
To say though, as a fan, and that, you know, switching to that other fan side, just I kind of like the idea of the First Doctor coming back, but I just don't think he wasn't the First Doctor. You know, in many ways, he wasn't the same character. Yeah, it was just a bit all over the place, I suppose, is maybe my summary of it.
Okay, so I'm going to say basically the same thing as you. Okay. So this is going to be a very short episode.
Shall we get some quick listener correspondence first of all?
Yeah.
Is this on Twitter?
Before we
this
pick
is,
up.
This is on Twitter. Yeah. We've got Paul at P Waring. I didn't enjoy Twice Upon a Time, so he's very much drawn, you know. Not much of a plot, and I'm not a fan of bringing past Doctors using a different actor. The World War One bit at the end was quite good, though, and I'm looking forward to a new Doctor with hopefully better non-clingy companions. I think that's a reference to the fact that Stephen Moffat will get rid of a companion and bring a companion back, and get rid of a companion and bring a companion back.
No one's ever really dead, are they?
No one's ever really dead. But isn't that kind of nice?
Yeah. My favourite thing, did you share this on Twitter, Mark? Was there a screenshot of everybody on Twitter who presumably live tweeting at the at the moment Clara showed up? It was just loads of people just going fuck off Clara, fuck off Clara, fuck off Clara. It was funny, but it was so sad.
Merry Christmas, Jenna Coleman. Gav Wood, regular contributor. Gav Wood. I'm not sure how objective I can be about Twice Upon a Time. I absolutely loved it. Incredibly moving. Capaldi unsurprisingly puts in yet another astonishing performance. And Bradley makes a great First Doctor, even though, and I think this is something we're going to discuss in a bit more detail, even though Moffat seems to have ramped up the sexism a tad, or completely invented the sexism, is my kind of feeling on that.
So, yes, I'm with you on
but
that.
We'll come to that in a minute.
So, first and foremost, I agree with you, John. And I felt this with Time of the Doctor as well. Watching it with my family, particularly people who just are there to relax after a big dinner, not even actively wanting to watch it in support of me. It's just people
are vulnerable.
doesn't even matter what's on, as long as there's something you can fall asleep in front of. There was an awful lot that my mum, my dad, my sister, her husband were definitely confused by. Not just the mythology, the series 10 mythology, but you know, like the fact that we're starting back. I'm going, oh my god, that's from the 10th planet. That was in 1966. That was the first regeneration.
And that was just his mum.
So there's definitely that. There's definitely like a tying up of loose ends. I don't know. Did I feel uncomfortable? Yes, I think I probably did, because I want everyone to watch Doctor Who and enjoy it to the same level. Well, maybe not the same level as I do, but not an exclusionary feeling that comes out of it. And I just kind of feel like introducing a Doctor at Christmas time is maybe a good idea. Like a Christmas invasion. You can there's a completely blank slate, what an adventure to get on board with. Getting rid of a Doctor at Christmas time. Particularly in this instance where I kind of feel like he's been going for ages. This has got to be the longest amount of time that we've known that an actor was leaving Doctor Who up to the point where he actually does leave Doctor Who.
Well, surely. Was Tennant's not quite stretched?
Tennant's was also quite stretched.
Did he get a whole seat? Was that...
So he'd announced his departure before the specials, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least after... No, before the specials, because that was the whole point of the next Doctor, wasn't it?
Right, yes.
The promo for that was, oh, is David Morrison going to be the next Doctor Who?
So then there was... That was a full year.
Just reminded me of something. We did get some... Paul Gibbon on Twitter said, in response to that, I say, in a word prolonged, if Star Wars Episode 7 can make it to cinema spoiler-free, why do I have to hear about Peter Capaldi leaving a year before his regeneration story and the Whittaker announcement over a year before her first full episode? Which I think, actually, that's a very good point, because I think when, you know what, Capaldi announced his departure in January.
Mm-hmm.
So before that last series, a series which ends with him dying.
Yeah.
And that, which ended what, in June?
Yes.
June, July?
Yes, I think it was June, yeah, certainly.
Oh no, it would have been July because I was back in Edinburgh. I think very start of July. And then you've got to wait another 5 months for a regeneration story. I totally get people kind of going, look, can we just kind of get on with it and be excited for this kind of new era? But the problem is that obviously the way television works and the way waiting for the guy in charge to kind of come along means that you kind of tread in water a little bit. And I do wonder, and I know Stephen Moffat has said in interviews that he only agreed to do the Christmas special because he was worried that if there was no Doctor Who Christmas special this year, there would never be one again.
Yeah.
Which is a fair point, but then part of me was kind of just like, so?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the end of the world if you lose it. Because I think Series 10 would have been quite interesting, actually, if it had properly ended where it's supposed to end.
Well, I thought he was... I can't really remember what I knew at the time. So you lose kind of track a little bit. But I thought he was going to die at the end of that series, I thought. But, you know, because it was... It worked so well, and it would have been just a perfect time when he got...
Well, because that opens with him about to regenerate. And I remember watching that last episode of the series at my dad's, And the bit where he has a flashback to all the companions, like, oh fuck, they're gonna do this tonight.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, no, oh here's David Bradley.
Mm.
And there was also quite loud white noise coming from the BBC receiver in Edinburgh. So I didn't really understand what was happening. And I was kind of a bit like, oh okay, that's quite cool. But you still kind of felt, but I kind of feel that this story's kind of over.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the modern doctors now, David Tennant, Matt Smith, Peter Capaldi, they all do an amazingly heroic thing, die, but then we have to have all the speechifying and the kind of going back and the,
yeah.
And you know, fine, that's great because you know it gives you just a little bit more of that actor in that role. But then it's like, well, why not just write the script differently and just have them do something heroic and regenerate?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the incidental music tends to drown out their amazing speeches anyway, I find.
Yeah, I had to listen to it a couple of times before I worked out.
You need to recalibrate your speakers. I remember I was in the Sarah Jane Adventures once. I was like, I didn't hear a bloody word anybody's saying. I mean, Murray Gold didn't even score that. And I switched the input over and said, oh, that's better. I think so the music's in the background and the vocals in the foreground. But
no, because I did have to, like, what was the Doctor's last line? I had to keep listening
again. Yeah. It's quite quiet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very quiet, and maybe rightly so, because as somebody pointed out, that whole speech that the Doctor does could be seen as mansplaining
how to be
the Doctor to the new Doctor. Yeah.
But then also those exact same people were going, oh, Peter Capaldi's first series, he wasn't very doctorish, he was really harsh. So you could also read it as just going, nobody gave me a speech before I started, so maybe I should just do a quick speech just to make sure we don't have that again.
No, but I just think it's funny that on another level, it's funny that the Doctor's line is, Doctor, I let you go, as if, right, all you whinging little fucking people who don't want it to be a woman, tell you what, this is the end. There you are.
Yeah.
Just let the Doctor go, and then there'll be another Doctor. It's not for you. It's why if it's a new show, bleh. But I don't know. If we're picking up on that, there were so many kind of things. I went, oh, how are people going to read into that? The Doctor doing the speech, the final line, Doctor, I let you go, and then the TARDIS trying to like tip the Doctor. Like it was properly shaking the new Doctor out of the TARDIS
moment's defence. That is obviously the first bit of Doctor Who that Chris Chibnall's written as the showrunner,
because
they did the same thing with Russell T Davis so Moffat's last line is, Doctor, I let you go, a bunch of regeneration energy spurts out of him and he smashes the TARDIS. Because Chris Chibnall's gone, I think the rumour at the moment is that it's going to be all Earthbound next year. There's going to be no TARDIS and stuff like that. So he's clearly wanting to get the new Doctor to a certain place.
No, but it just looked like a perfect spot.
But I know what you mean.
There's
so much stuff
all over this.
Isn't there something in the...
And also the fact, I mean, like, I really liked... Well, no, actually, I didn't. I liked the Doctor's first line of, oh, brilliant. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was great. But I wished that rather than kind of like conceal her in light, we knew she was coming, we knew it was going to be concealing her in flashes of light and camera lens flares and all that kind of interesting thing. Just, boom, do what Matt Smith did and give this like... Last year I got a copy of, is it The Quotable Doctor Who by Cavan Scott and Mark Wright. And there's this great bit where it has first lines and last lines.
Yeah.
And everyone's last line is like one line, apart from, first line is everyone, apart from Matt Smith's first line, which was a monologue.
He's
checking each part of the body and all that. I just thought, I would like to have seen something like that, rather than shroud it in mystery.
But no, I kind of liked, I get what you're saying, and I think... Yeah, because everybody knew, like Paul was saying, you know, we know all this stuff in advance, and even like your mum or your girlfriend's mum or whoever's watching it with you, they know it's going to be a woman as well.
Yeah.
So why not do the Matt Smith Peter Capaldi change where it's just like boom, and it's just like a really sudden change.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm a woman now, but yeah, it was a proper kind of like, ooh, shot from behind. Ooh, there's a reflection.
The
payoff's really nice. But the thing I like about it is that it's just two lines of dialogue. And you've got no idea what's coming next. And that's kind of nice. And I hope they kind of maintain that and they don't do that insufferable thing BBC Worldwide have been doing for the past couple of years, which is just like, oh, we put some Cybermen out in the street, should we just announce it? Should we just tell everybody that's what we're going to do just in case? Oh, should we put John Sim in the trailer?
Yeah, well...
Or in the selling of Shadow on Blu-ray, should we just tell everybody Tom Baker's in it at the end?
Yeah.
Should we just do that? Because then we'll sell a few more Blu-rays. And it's like...
So did you actually tell us what you thought? Cause you jumped to Twitter, really, didn't you?
So for me, I mostly actually quite liked it. And I certainly, from about the moment they start singing Silent Night. And as somebody who was incredibly sarcastic about the Sainsbury's advert a couple of years ago, I'm aware how hypocritical this is. But I was actually quite moved. I liked Capaldi's kind of last lecture, because it was just like, here we go, this is the kind of last showcase for all this kind of whimsy and charm, and, you know, and John Pertwee's jacket's hanging up on a coat hanger behind him, apparently, which is quite
nice. Yes, it is from Planet of the Daleks.
So that was all very nice, and I liked that. But it took me a long time to get into it, and I don't know what it was. Like you, I did like the kind of 709 episodes previously, because somebody pointed out that, you know, there's no other show that can go previously 709 episodes later and then end with to be continued. That's kind of amazing.
Previously,
yeah,
50 odd years ago.
That is kind of amazing.
Yeah,
but yeah, and I don't know, it was just kind of weird. There's some lines in it I liked, but I was kind of just like, I'm not really kind of going along with this. The thing that really kind of just took me out of it every time was the First Doctor stuff. The bit where I was like, oh, this is really promising, was when the First Doctor's like, you know, this is a level 5 planet, and then the 12th Doctor goes, and it's protected. He's like, what? And I loved that idea. I thought, oh, are we going to play more with that? This idea that, you know, the Hartnell Doctor would just turn up at a place, help everybody, and then bugger off and go somewhere else. It was never about being this kind of heroic figure of the galaxy. He was just somebody who would just travel around and help out where he could.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be really interesting. And up until the point where they show like all the kind of fucking flashbacks and stuff like that, and then Capaldi has the great line, which is, you know, they cut out all the jokes, and then they run off in the TARDIS, and it's like, oh yeah, this is going to be really interesting. And then it's just like, oh, he's your granddad at Christmas dinner making inappropriate comments.
But there was also that bit with those flashbacks where they said, this is the Doctor of War.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, really? I mean, I know they've played up this War Doctor stuff, but that's, is that what he is now? I sort of managed to kind of lose that somewhere.
I mean, there's that kind of line
he's
in
now the
end.
Doctor of War. That's our hero, is it?
Yeah, it's kind of odd, isn't it? But there is that kind of line by the First Doctor at the end, which is, oh, so that's what it means to be a Doctor of War. It's like, you do actually, you go in and you save as many people as you can. And I said that kind of like made it a bit easier with me. But yeah, I love that kind of, that thing where it's just, it's the First Doctor kind of going, nah, that's not me. Like when she goes, you know, oh, you're the Doctor of War. And I'm like, oh, no, ma'am, never. And there's little flashes like that where I was just like, yeah, David Bradley's really good. And like, you can see the kind of character of the First Doctor shining through. And the bit with the sonic sunglasses trying to figure out the glass. And he goes, would you just take those stupid fucking things off and look at the face? You don't need the gadgets. You don't need to just use your fucking brain.
Yeah.
Which is something I think we've kind of lost a lot in kind of modern Doctor Who. But just due to the the nature of running times, it's like he has to just like suddenly just like, oh, I knew this all along, but I was just letting you catch up with me.
Whenever he gets that cosmic crystal out, that I just, you know. So, yeah, I know exactly.
So mostly I actually quite, I like the idea of doing like a very small scale regeneration story. I like that was like quite a nice kind of different thing to do. But I just wish, because they kind of really, they spent quite a long time, because I watched all of Capaldi again recently, just before this. So I actually watched, I think I watched The Doctor Falls like the day before, so just on Christmas Eve. And they do actually spend quite a long time of that episode. From about the halfway point, he's already seen the regeneration energy. And I said, for fuck's sake, so it's, if you were going to do that kind of lovely small-scale story about a man who has to decide whether or not he's going to die or whether or not he's going to live on, that's a really lovely idea, and that's, and you can hark back to It's a Wonderful Life, and, you know, what's the universe going to look like without you, and all that kind of stuff. There's so much promise in there to do something really, really interesting, and they kind of just threw it away for cheeky jokes about male nurses and
feather
dusters and
This is quite an interesting thing, is that when Eccleston, so I didn't really know Eccleston was going to leave, so I'm going to leave his regeneration. Right, so I knew, but I don't know how attached I'd got to him. I loved the first series, but the regeneration came before you really, I think, saw what he could do if he stayed for a couple of seasons.
Yeah, sure.
So my first experience proper of an emotional regeneration was seeing Tennant on New Year's Day. And I think we've talked about this before, but I think I genuinely considered, because it takes ages to happen, I just thought, I really like him as a Doctor. I don't really know this other guy. I don't really think I want to know this other guy. I think I'm just going to, before the face changes, I'm just going to stop it and then never watch it again. And then, you know, and then that's it. And then he's always alive. Yeah. He's always the Doctor. Yeah. And I can just shut everything out. Quite irrational, I might have had.
Funnily enough, I thought about that you saying that, because you've said that to me before, I think, on this, while I was watching the regeneration scene, I was, because I really, we'll come to this later, but I do really love Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. And there was a point, and it's not because he's turned into a woman, because I do genuinely think Jodie Whittaker is going to be fantastic. Yeah. But I was like, I could do what Ben did, and just turn it off just now.
So I also felt the same way with Matt Smith going.
Yeah.
Even though I knew Capaldi was coming along, he was more of a known entity. I was quite excited it was going to be him, but I was still like, I don't want to see Matt Smith not be the Doctor. This time, I was like, yeah, fucking hurry up. Like, and I don't know why it was. I think it was because I think the Doctor Falls was such a perfect final episode.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had the news constantly hanging over us. Then you have this whole thing where essentially this episode, I did like it, so I don't want to make it feel like I'm going to be negative about the whole thing. But you know that last maybe 15 minutes of David Tennant's fight at the end of time part 2 where he goes and visits fucking everybody.
Yeah.
It was like they took that, made it into an hour, and that's what Capaldi got for his final thing. He was ready to go. I felt like I'd continually been saying goodbye to him. So when it came, it was absolutely fine. I didn't want him to not go, which I was kind of like, this is bullshit, because I don't want him to go. Again, not that I don't think Jodie Whittaker's going to be a good Doctor.
Yeah.
I just want Capaldi to be the Doctor forever. But I was like, I don't care now. Just go. Just for fuck, go, will you?
Yeah, it is kind of sad. Like I say, if they'd done something different at the end of the Doctor Falls, there was at least that you had 50 minutes left with him.
Yeah.
And he's making this decision by meeting his first self.
Yeah.
And having this kind of encounter with the testimony thing and the soldier. Of whose identity we'll get to in a minute, but I think that would have been really great. I can see there's just so much promise in it that I don't think comes
and
off.
And it is because it's a two-hander. Like, he's sharing a stage with another Doctor, but not even that actual actor.
Yeah, sure.
And he's not, so he's getting 50% of his own regeneration story. He's not getting 100%. And then it's not even like a heroic big baddie, a big naughty thing to be stopped, which shows up. So I'm going to go out on a limb here. So I actually think it was a bad idea to have David Bradley in it, the first Doctor in it. Because I don't think his performance was all that great. I think you're right. You mentioned this at the start. I think the whole idea of him trying to apologise and explain for 60 Cent's abilities is not just over the top.
Yeah.
A lot of it was created.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then we're three white guys. We're sitting here, we're three white guys.
I think, you know...
Do we have a right to say that? I mean, are we completely overlooking stuff that other people might be more sensitive
to? Well, I think people who... Peter Dylan Trenchard, who writes the sort of thing for Den of Geek.
Yes.
The sort of the geeky spots and references and stuff like that.
Is this totally made up Doctor Who is his podcast, is it? I think.
Yeah.
Also does some sterling work to writing about Power Rangers as well.
But he, in the process of writing them up for Twice Upon a Time, like, actively sought out people on Twitter going, look, do you have any evidence of William Hartnell being, like, actively sexist as the Doctor?
Yeah.
Because, there's some little bits and pieces that are kind of just more of the time, like, you know, or you stay here, or, you know, just little things like that, which isn't... It's not.
Yeah, so there's the classic trope of the women stay behind and the Doctor and Ian go off. But actually, there's a lot of instances where Ian and Barbara would go off and the Doctor, the doddery old man, would stay with the kid.
Yeah.
The kid. That's why the kid's staying, because it's a child.
Yeah.
To be honest, there were some points where I thought, is this Captain Kirk as an old man that we're talking about here?
Because it's not the first
Doctor I recognise.
No. But then, like I say, there was flashes of him in there, which I kind of went with. And that's what made me angrier. Because I was like, well, it would be fine if he was just, that was just how he was characterised. But like Stephen Moffat's like actively writing bits in there that you can see the first Doctor doing. And you're like, why are you not just, like, it's just a cheap joke. And then the subject of cheap jokes in presenting the first Doctor for a younger audience.
Yeah.
While I was tracking down your Christmas presents this morning, I came across an old issue of Doctor Who Adventures from the 10th of August 2006.
Oh my.
Vintage. Is it still going, that magazine?
I know, I think it's on a hiatus. But on the very front cover,
I don't know if you read the most recent one, Nicholas Pegg, who wrote a really naughty comment in the children's crossword section about BBC Worldwide. And so he had to go.
On the very front cover, it's got, meet the very first Doctor. Yikes! He's ancient.
It actually says that he's got his that haughty picture of him from the Celestial Toymaker as well.
This made me laugh. Doctor was first shown on Saturday the 23rd of November 1963. That's over 40 years ago. Your grandparents might have been the same age as you are now. Fuck. Oh, it's like watching an episode of the fan show. The first episode...
Let's punch up.
Oh, here we go. Susan's grandfather was called the Doctor. He was a grumpy old man who lived in a police box that was massive inside.
Massive. Oh, can we have the next compact? Can we have Bradley Walsh walk in and go, it's massive inside here. Wow.
I mean, the point is that they're making this quite a good one. Today you can watch Doctor Who on television, catch repeats on BBC Three, watch DVDs, you can even download TARDISodes to your mobile.
God, remember those days?
Yeah.
Like, see, this to me is as laughable as, you know, Stephen Moffat writing, the 60s. And this is only 10 years ago. But in the 1960s, when the series was made in black and white, each episode was shown once, and once only, as the old-fashioned film... Just say film reels. As the old-fashioned film reels took up a lot of space. And they weren't even they recorded them on 60mm.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, never mind. Many of these episodes were binned. Full stop. Oh no!
Binned. Oh no. Okay. I think.
So, yes.
Okay, so. Well, so there's a reality to it, and then there's people.
The final thing on this, which may sort of prescience the Christmas special, the Doctor. So this is obviously 2006. David Tennant is the incumbent Doctor at the time. So the Doctor. Then, when Doctor Who started, this older-looking Doctor wore really old-fashioned clothes and had a quick temper. Now, in his 10th body, the Doctor is much younger and wears a trendy striped suit. Although he gets angry sometimes, he is the friendliest, funniest man you could meet. I mean, that could describe you or I, Ben. That describes us all.
Apart from the fashionable suit.
Apart from the fashionable suit, that is very true.
Oh my god. That is.
So, yeah, so I mean, that's a little glimpse into the past. And I think that the problem is, and somebody actually, Josh Snares on Twitter, who is like a YouTuber, put together a video about kind of how. And a very young guy to have taken.
I saw that video.
Yeah, to have taken so much to William Hartnell. I was like,
he's dressed like William.
Yeah, he's dressed like William Hartnell, and he's definitely younger than me.
He's in his 20s, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in his 20s, and that's kind of great that he's kind of taken this. Mm. But he makes the point that, you know, what you could have done was actually just make this kind of love letter to that era, as you know, as you're saying goodbye. Because I remember when I saw the end of the Doctor Falls, going, oh great. We're going back to the first regeneration, which was, you know, at that point, the biggest change that the show could have made, and it could have gone horribly wrong, but here we are now, and it's about to do the same thing. Brilliant. And so he's kind of making the point that, you know, you could have just made this kind of love letter, and you could have got younger fans into the old stuff, but instead you've kind of painted them as this kind of old sexist.
So it absolutely devalues it.
Yeah.
I love the recreation of the final moments of the 10th planet when they're escaping from the cyber ship.
Yeah.
But after that point, I just feel like it absolutely devalued it. I also think, I'm going to say, I don't think, David Bradley's performance, I don't think, physically, I think he was very good as the Doctor. The costuming, I think the movement, I think the voice, I don't know, there was a weird, stilted, halting delivery, which Hartnell didn't have.
Yeah. No.
You know,
it was very annoying. I watched that again on the bus that's coming along, and it just became every
that
time I get
a rarefied environment to take information in.
Second time, it was your second watch. But just that voice, that staccato kind of.
Yeah.
It's quite annoying.
I think what we had was a person doing an impression of Richard Herndl from The Five Doctors. Because we've done an episode about The Five Doctors. Everybody knows I fucking hate that. and this is all aside from the fact that, to be honest, I don't agree with recasting the Doctor. If it was a case of recasting, then don't bother creating regeneration. Just do what James Bond does. It's the same guy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think there was that comment when 12th Doctor meets the first, and he says something about, oh, your face is all
yeah.
And I thought, are they trying to suggest that regeneration has changed his face?
So they, yeah,
he's about to regenerate. That's why he looks like David Bradley rather than William Hartnell.
If they'd done a bit more with that,
yeah. So they had a line in Time Crash to explain why Peter Davison looks older.
Yeah,
And it's the crossing of timelines and the bleeding of time and all that kind of.
That's also why David Tennant's hair doesn't look quite in Day of the Doctor.
Yes, yeah, but it's like combed
it's
down.
Kind of, yeah, it's kind of down rather than having that kind of amazing.
Yeah. But I know that there are other more liberal Doctor Who viewers who and contributors and commentators whom I share a great many attitudes with.
I thought you were you're a right wing Doctor.
No. So there's a lot of progressive stuff about Doctor Who that I really agree with. I just don't think, don't recast the actor, because there's a reason that we say Capaldi rather than the Doctor.
Yeah, I think
because
that's...
But they are intrinsically part of what that Doctor is. It is certainly the writing. It's a melding between the script and the person. But it's just like...
I wonder what his family think of it as well. I mean, you know, his granddaughter...
Well, I know his granddaughter was quite complimentary of Adventure in Space and Time.
Which is great, because he's playing
Hartnell
himself, you know.
I would be interested to see they think of that.
Yeah, they've now changed the character of her... I know that's not that important.
Yeah,
in the scheme of things,
it kind of
but still,
is, though. It's like,
she wrote that book on him and stuff.
Yeah.
And
although, I mean, she's very open about the fact that, yeah, he wasn't the nicest man sometimes, and he had skeletons in the cupboard.
So that's fine.
The person William Hartnell, not the First Doctor.
Well, yeah, and I kind of feel like that there was a lot of... Because there's a lot of chat about Hartnell, particularly his attitude on race. And I kind of felt like that's what was bleeding in. Like the actor and the Doctor were one in the same.
Which is something that I'm at
and
sick
they were criticising that.
The back teeth of hearing is Annika Wills and Michael... I mean, Michael Crey is no longer with us, and that's very sad enough. You know, that's... But like that kind of just like, oh yeah, William Hartnell is a bit of an old grumpy racist. And it's like, fine. Like, can we not celebrate them? Like,
we're
in a very dangerous period of this kind of binary sort of look at people and kind of like you're either. And actually, Stephen Moffat talks very very well about this when he's talking to Toby Haydock on the newest Who's Round podcast. He kind of talks about the difference between the left and the right and social media and stuff like that. But we are in a very dangerous position where, like, and I don't think this helps to write the First Doctor as a kind of terrible misogynist. That, you know, yeah, fine, William Hartnell maybe had some questionable views about race and some questionable views about other things, but that does not intrinsically make him a bad person. And actually, if you listen to interviews with anybody that ever worked with him at the start of Doctor Who, right up to kind of the middle, I think as far as Peter Purvis and Jackie Lane, everybody's like pretty complimentary of him and says, yeah, it was all bluster, it's all, you know, he was actually a very sweet man, really lovely to work with.
It was all bluster.
Very generous.
Somebody definitely illness as well.
It's like, frustration, it's illness, it's... So, I worry with things like this, that it's kind of... It's further kind of just putting somebody in a box, and there's no complexity and there's no nuance.
I think it only served to devalue the whole 60s Doctor Who. I don't know. Okay, so I'll tell you what, this has all been fairly negative.
Yeah, great talking points.
But let's focus on some great stuff that we enjoyed. There's a pause there.
I mean, I have stuff.
I love Pal Mackie being back.
Yeah,
like, I love Bill being back.
I really like the scene with her and the First Doctor just outside the big tower where Rusty the Dalek is.
Yeah,
they have a hug.
Yeah, how was that? That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of idea that, you know, the First Doctor doesn't identify as this kind of great hero and defender of the universe. He's just a guy who's just trying to find out more about the universe and stuff like that. And then, you know, she gives them... I think that's really lovely. And again, just stuff like that really fucks me off. So I really like that. I like Mark Gatiss' opening scene, where he's just like in this...
Oh, I loved everything. I thought he was exceptional.
He's my speech performance. That he's got. He's great. But I love that speech he's got, you know, which kind of ends with, you know, I only wish I spoke German or you spoke English. That's brilliant.
So when he's also sitting in the First Doctor's TARDIS talking about no longer being ready to die.
Yeah.
I thought that was stunning.
He's absolutely the emotional, which is kind of, I mean, I love Margatis, but I never thought, although actually I'm describing the emotional heart of the Christmas special. He's also the absolute emotional heart of that League of Gentlemen three-parter with that bingo collar.
Yeah.
Jesus! Yeah, stories,
I've not watched the third part yet.
Have you not? It is.
But yeah, that was incredible.
Not disappointed at all in the League of Gentlemen.
Yeah, it was really great.
I think it's the best acting work I've ever seen him do.
Mm.
I sometimes think in Sherlock he seems a bit more of he seems a bit less real than Benedict Cumberbatch or Martin Freeman. But I think in this, because everything I guess is a little more heightened, and that's as a performer where he lives, I think. But
it was quite a dignified performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And when he steps out of the TARDIS to give his life in exchange for Bill's,
that scene was
just perfect. I think he was spectacular.
Very good. And I mean, although I hate the line, I do quite like him in the bit where William Hartnell goes. Well, not William Hartnell. Ooh, that was a weird thing. Where the first daughter goes, you know.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
That's what I'm talking about.
But when the first daughter says, you know, aren't all women made of glass? I just really like Mark Gatiss going, oh, very good, sir.
Yeah.
And he's kind of just trying to suck up to the superior officer.
It was like watching like a Darling and Melt Chipmunk come back at it. Or what's his name? Is it Captain Carstairs in the War Games?
Yeah.
Of him.
When he's pulled out of time, that kind of whirring thing around his face that's kind of, oh no, it's timeline error.
Yeah.
I was like, is this the war? Because it reminded me a bit of those kind of like, you know, in the War Games when they've got those sort of shields around their faces and they're getting brainwashed.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, so First World War, yeah, I thought it was. And of course, Toby Whithouse, another Doctor Who writer, is the opposite. And to be honest, that was a staggering performance as well. Like, all fluent German, all with such an overhanging, deathly brutality to the situation. I thought he was fucking cracking in it as well.
I thought all the First World War stuff was really good.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved Matt Lucas's entrance as well. That like really just got me at one point, because I really like Nardole.
Yeah.
Or Nardole, depending on.
Nardole.
So yeah, when he just love him turning up, and then Capaldi's like, you know, oh, just when you thought your day couldn't get any worse, and you know, here he is.
Yeah,
kind of nice. And there's a little group hug on the thing. There's loads of really lovely moments.
And a callback to the invisible hair.
Yes.
Which was in You've Not Seen It, what was it called? The Wedding of River Song?
The Husbands of River Song.
No, I've not seen that one. I hopefully never will.
That's good! It's good, it's genuinely good.
Like, is it?
Yeah.
River Song, though.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I like.
Of course, Clara, she was amazing.
In another studio elsewhere.
So I was like, is Clara. Her very first. Yeah. There's two shots of her.
Yeah.
First one, is that CGI?
Yeah, she's basically. I think she was never on set or on location.
Yeah.
So they must have got her one day, put her in front of a green screen, filmed it, and then just put that on wherever they were.
Because of course it's not Clara.
Because I assume she was in costume.
Yes.
I don't think they then photoshopped her face onto a CGI Clara Oswald.
It just looked quite. Yeah.
It looked odd.
But her face looked CGI as well, which was weird. And I guess it wasn't Clara, actual Clara.
No, it was glass.
It was glass Clara. Bill being Clara.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I don't think that was because.
Fuck off, Clara! No,
I don't think it was as effective as when Karen Gillan shows up at the end of time.
No.
So that there's actual physical interaction between. As it turned out, that's the thing. Two people in wigs.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
She's bald.
They were both bald.
Wearing wigs.
I think that's true. I did remember going, oh, that's nice, but then going, oh, wait a minute, they're not in the same room.
Yeah.
So it kind of removes you slightly, which is a bit odd and a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
There was a moment that I thought was going to be much better when the First Doctor comes out of the TARDIS and they say, we're going to reunite, a bit like This Is Your Life or something.
Yeah.
You know, this person you're going to, I can't remember what line is that.
Did I write it down? Oh no, I didn't. But it's you will give you a chance to speak to her again or something.
You can have her back, I think was the line.
Yeah. And I thought it was
because Capaldi has been talking about that quite a lot, and they had the photo of her on the desk.
Yes.
All through Series 10. So,
and then
you know,
Bill walks out and he's like, oh.
I do wonder if there was ever, nobody's ever said anything, but if there ever was a point where they're just like, we could.
Stephen Moffat says that Bill was never in the first draft. Yeah. But it would seem to me there would have to be some quite considerable writing changes because there was obviously always the space for a companion figure
in that.
Unless the first Doctor was supposed to fulfil the role of all the stuff that Bill did, or vice versa.
Yeah.
It just seems like there were two Doctors, and there was always that space for an emotional companion role. In which case, who was that going to be? Was it going to be Nardole? Was it going to be Caroline Anne Foy? I don't know. I don't know. Like, never heard any of this. I'm sure this is something for Andrew Pixley in a billion years' time.
But for Stephen Moffat's autobiography, what it is.
Yeah. But, yeah, because I had a... Was it... No.
Yeah.
No. Well, but hey, it's Bill, that's good. Yeah.
But again, that would have thrilled us.
Yeah.
Wow, well,
how do you begin explaining that to everybody who's watching?
The thing I just want to... I want to play devil's advocate here. Somebody on Twitter said, you know, all these people giving Doctor Who a hard time for playing to the hardcore viewers at Christmas never seem to bother about EastEnders or anything like that. And I... happened to, because basically I spent Christmas Day mostly by myself because my mum and her partner were at his family's and they came back and we'll watch Emmerdale, and I kind of felt bad having not spent the day with them.
Well, I love that you do that. little party.
Yeah. They're like, we're gonna have a few more drinks to watch Emmerdale. I was about to go, all right, enjoy yourselves. But then I kind of felt a bit guilty. I was like, well, no, I'm not really spending a day with him. That's not...
Yeah.
I was like, I'll sit with him for a bit. I'll have another drink and I'll sit with him. And it was the most complex... It was all taking place in a guy's head. There was a guy who'd been hit by a car on Christmas Eve, one of the characters.
This is Emmerdale.
This is Emmerdale.
Formerly Emmerdale Farm.
Yeah, so he had been hit by a car, and then all of this... So basically the first, I think, first 20 minutes was like a time loop where he was waking up on like three different Christmas days with like subtle differences. And I'm sitting there going, I know I've had a few drinks today, but this is far more complicated than any Stephen Moffat Doctor Who.
Definitely go and check out the STV player then.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's very bizarre. But then, you know, does it help to look at Doctor Who as a soap opera with a very particular audience?
Well, yes.
Or is it... As it has always been and should be, a mass entertainment that just so happens to have a bunch of people covet it and not want it to change. That's a discussion for another time. Yeah. But
I think there is definitely discussion there. But what is Doctor Who now?
Is it
just as you said, really? Is it just for fans? It's meant to be for everybody, I think. You know, my girlfriend's sister said towards the end of it, she said, "He's the first version of that Doctor or something."
Yeah.
I was like, yes. And, okay, they tried to explain that a couple of times in the episode, but she still wasn't quite sure. Because she'd never seen this guy before.
Because, he was also not the actor.
Yeah, well,
and that's where a lot of people's touchstones are.
Yeah. Which is why, if it is true, I don't think it's... Well, sort of spoilers, but it's just theory at the moment, or rumour about Jodie's season being jettisoned all the past.
Yeah.
That's what I've been hearing anyway, which I think would be brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's about time.
Start again.
It's been 12 years.
Start fresh. And then another 10 years, she'll be back to this stage again probably, and she'll be meeting the Fifth Doctor or something.
So, okay, let's bring it in then. Let's I mean, we've already basically covered this, but let's get it from everybody. Favourite performances, favourite scenes.
Oh, sure.
John.
Out of the four people in this episode, I think I would probably agree with what you were saying about Mark Gatiss being... Capaldi was brilliant as well, but let's go for, I think, Gatiss.
Because I just don't think Capaldi was the star.
Capaldi
of his
just
had... He wasn't the star of his own show.
No, and it was just a kind of tail end from the previous episode, wasn't it? It was just extending that...
Yeah.
Well, we've got to find a reason just to keep him around. I don't want to regenerate, I don't want to go, or... But whatever, you know.
Yeah.
No. So that was a Gatiss. Yeah. And what was the other?
Favourite scene.
Scene. Pretty come back to me on that one, I'll have a think.
All right. I mean, favourite performance for me, since you've already taken Gatiss, who is fantastic.
I've just pinched him, is he?
Yeah. I know, so I don't know what Ben's going to do now, because I'm going to go Capaldi. Actually, I know what you could go for.
Okay.
But just because I think, you know, he gets to do his last kind of victory lap, and I kind of just like, yeah, fine. Like that's, and it's great, and I am going to miss him, but I'm also excited about the future, because that's kind of how this show works, really. I thought he got to do the kind of the gamut of the kind of slightly grumpy, irritable Doctor, the twinkly doctor, the sad, mournful doctor. You get to do the whole run one last time. Ben.
Well, okay, I mean, Gatiss, any scene that Gatiss did. So, the regeneration, I think, is probably my favourite scene, though I didn't get any of the emotional power from it that I got from previous regenerations.
Although, the regeneration scene, right, and it's something that's come up a lot in the past week, is, you know, run fast. No, hang on. Laugh hard, run fast, be kind.
Yeah.
Don't regenerate in a TARDIS which is in flight. Because it's never ended well.
Yeah.
And why did you keep doing it?
You forget.
Very dangerous. you know. What was it somebody said on Twitter? You wouldn't have a stroke while driving a car if you could help it.
So, I think actually that's just jogged a thought there. And I thought... There was a review for Starburst that I think listener, we can say J.R. South.
Yes, yeah.
Starburst magazine wrote a review, and he said that he couldn't shake the feeling watching this that it seemed like an episode too many, and it seemed a little musty. It's two older gentlemen dressed very drab compared to the pictures that we see of how Jodie's Doctor's going to look.
Yeah,
and I think just at the end of it, I really couldn't grab hold of the emotional punch of that regeneration, because like I think I've said on the podcast before, we're beginning to see a lot of stuff being repeated again. Familiar motifs, familiar scenes, familiar pieces of action, and this was another, like, it was exciting when Tennant exploded and running TARDIS and Matt Smith is,
and when John Sim did it in the Derek Jacobi, that was exciting.
And I think at this point, I was just like, all right, again, you've wrecked the joint.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously the Matt Smith regeneration was very protracted and he got to do that, but then he also had the kind of jolt. That I kind of thought that with that, oh, well, maybe we'll get something different this time. And when he falls over, when he's talking about, like, children being able to hear his name, I was like, ooh, maybe we'll get a good old-fashioned lying down regeneration.
Yeah,
that would
on
be
the
nice.
Floor, yeah.
But no.
In basically the same position that the first Doctor was lying.
Yes, yeah.
Though, as we've been pointing out on Twitter many times, not where the second Doctor wakes up from in The Power of the Daleks, is the other side of the console.
Yes.
So I don't know. I think I will enjoy revisiting this, but
lots to enjoy. But I think it's like I say, it's not quite.
I was going to say my favourite scene, I think, is on the on the battlefield when the camera sort of pulls out and there's a bit of a speech just about that day.
Yeah, that's nice.
And everyone's shaking hands with the two forms of the Doctor.
Watching it on Christmas Day kind of brought that, and you think, oh well, that's quite special. But also just that point about two old guys just having an adventure. I went to see the new Star Wars a couple of days ago, and I was, without any spoilers, you know, just about really anything in it, but just the fact that there's so many women in there doing amazing things, apart from Rey, of course, but there's a few other characters that pop up. And I just came out of that, and also the, you know, the baddies, they're all blokes, I think.
Yeah, mostly,
And just coming out of it thinking...
Kate Dickie's a bad guy, that's about it.
Kate Dickie, yeah, get his ear in there. But coming out of that and thinking, okay, we've just had these women just do amazing things, and people of colour and different races and things, and then just thinking back to Doctor Who with just two old blokes, just having fighting and bickering, and I thought... Is that I did tweet about that as well, just saying, you know, I just can't wait. I think we just need more female heroes, really. And Jodie Whittaker will be a complete, total breath of fresh air. And I was a little bit dubious when I first heard the Jodie news, but now I'm completely...
Well, I wasn't dubious about a female doctor. I was dubious about her, because I haven't really seen her much. I've only seen her in Broadchurch. So I was like, oh, she's obviously very good at the serious, but I don't know if she can do... But then I watched Adult Life Skills, which is great.
Day,
And I was like, oh yeah, fine.
And you need to listen to her. She's done Radio 6.
Yeah, that was really good.
What's it called? Three Wise Women, I think.
Yeah, right?
Her and Sharon Horgan and some of the other. And she's great on that.
Yeah, she's really, really funny and kind of down to earth.
Yeah. So I've sort of totally come around to her. And just a female doctor, and that's great.
Yeah.
Although, also, that was that comment about you were saying earlier about how you nearly give, or you were tempted to stop watching Doctor Who. A mutual friend of ours, who used to run Voga.
Yes.
He will not watch any more Doctor Who. He says he's just he didn't even watch the Christmas special, And he says he's just sort of off. And I know at least two other people who are claiming they won't watch it because it's a female doctor, because they just think it's betraying the series. But that is probably a longer discussion for another.
I think when the series comes back, maybe.
But
I see Fathers for Justice tweeting.
Oh man, that was terrible.
No, I didn't. What did they do?
It was something that along the lines of
find that
because it's extraordinary. Because my immediate thought was, well, I guess, you know, they'll have less superheroes to dress up as when they're on roofs protesting divorce proceedings. But, first Star Wars and The Last Jedi went to the dark side with toxic masculinity. Now Doctor Who is just regenerated as a woman. Is it just us, or are all the male heroes disappearing?
And I saw that because someone retweeted it. And
I think it was us.
Well, someone said Batman, Superman,
yeah.
Aquaman, all these James male Bond. Heroes, yeah. All male heroes just from the last year alone, Spider-Man, and all these people saying, you know, we've not lost anything, and why should,
yeah,
something, but why should boys only have male?
Well, you know, you look at this, I think I said this when we were talking about the Jodie Whittaker announcement, it's like, you know, you look at something like The Hunger Games, which did phenomenally well, with not just, you know, teenage girls, but with, you know, teenage boys, and younger boys and girls, and it's like, and that's a female protagonist, and nobody's going, oh, I'm not going to watch that because there's a girl in it. It's like, oh, there's violence and like cool things, and yeah, I'm up for that. Like, if it's a beautifully drawn world, or worlds in the case of Doctor Who, then, you know, kids will watch it and kids will get on board with it. And
I don't understand. We've had a doctor, and this is the last thing, then we'll go and get another drink.
Yeah.
But I sat in the pub.
Ben can see me looking very thirsty.
But I just want to say this, because I finally think I got my argument down pat as to why I support this choice.
Okay.
I said this to my friend Charles in the pub the other day, because he was like, no, I don't. The doctor died, or the doctor was on the verge of dying, and he was given a gift of loads of new lives. And people wonder why he was crotchety, why he was odd, why he was old, why he was rude to people. And it's because he was now struggling. He'd made peace with his own death, and he'd given another life, which he used up by struggling to find meaning in his life. He didn't want to wallow in being the old doctor, the doctor of war. That's why he was going, be my pal, Clara. Am I a good man? What is he? Like, what is the doctor? What is the speech that he gives at the end of this episode? And the whole way through that final series is about a new perspective telling him that he can continue to have adventures, this old man who's seen the universe and basically done it all before, but there is an entirely new way of seeing the universe. And it's to be a minority, and it's to be black, or to be a woman, or something like that, and you immediately have a whole new universe of possibilities and experiences which are unique. He's fundamentally an explorer, an adventurer. Why would he not take that opportunity to physically change his sex so he can experience the universe completely anew from a new perspective? That's what was set up in series 10. That's what this 12th Doctor's life is all about. It was struggling to find a new meaning, and that's why it's perfectly fine that we have the 13th Doctor as a woman, and it's going to be exciting, and if anything, we will have a much better idea and attitude and fun with the Doctor. Was it you who said that it was great to see the Doctor's first line to be something like brilliant, as opposed to some angsty panic?
I don't think it was me, but okay. I echo that sentiment.
Someone did. It was not something angsty, it was not something brutal, it was not something...
I mean, she then got thrown out of the TARDIS and
she sure did.
Down to Sheffield.
But the first thing she wasn't obsessed with is what did it look like? Do I have new hair or whatever? It's like, oh, brilliant!
Yeah.
So that's exactly what it is. It's about the Doctor changing his perspective to see the universe afresh as an adventure, an experience. Explorer who left Gallifrey has wanted to do after so long. Sorry, no, that's not, I sound like everybody's old fucking granddad at the.
What did Charles say to that?
He just went, alright, I need to get my bus now. Alright, we're back. You've got drinks now. Anyway, another thing that I remembered about what I would like to. Anyway, I'm kidding. Well, it's a Christmas Carol. That is what we have. Yeah. We don't usually. What we did. We started the precedent last year, pairing
2 years ago, yeah, when we did Husbands of Every Song, the Feast of Stephen.
Yes, we did. Oh god, was that 2 years
that was
ago?
2 years ago.
Oh my god, yes it was. So we are pairing Twice Upon a Time with Stephen Moffat's first Christmas special, A Christmas Carol.
I thought we'd break with the format of the show a little bit, because why not? You know?
Sure.
We'll look from the present to the past, because Ben and I took so long to get these the rest of Matt Smith's first series done.
Yeah.
It kind of came around that we could have done an episode where we could put his last Christmas special, Stephen Moffat's last Christmas special, and his first Christmas special in the same episode.
So, what are we doing? Well, stats.
Stats. So, A Christmas Carol, written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Toby Haynes, aired on, Christmas Day 2010. And it was tied. It was tied with Come Fly With Me, later Doctor Who star
that classic
Matt Lucas, as the second most watched programme on Christmas Day in the United Kingdom behind EastEnders, with an average viewership of 10.3 million, peaking at 10.7 million.
Oh, God, they give their eye teeth for that these
but
days.
But the final rate for BBC One, so presumably once they got all the iPlayer stuff in, was 12.11 million, making the episode the fourth highest rated of the entire canon since the series was revived in 2005.
Yes, okay. I think
that's the highest rate. I still think that's the highest rate of the 2005 onwards run, rather than Doctor Who as a whole. So the fourth.
Yeah.
There we go. And then everybody got out there and realised, why do we have to sit around watching telly when they tell us? We make our own television schedule.
Pause it.
But gentlemen,
this is for the present.
To win the star prize. Which I'm still not going to tell you what it is, because it's wrapped, so...
Okay, so...
We'll have to unwrap it.
Okay.
Where do you think A Christmas Carol came in the first 5 decades poll? So this is out of 241 Doctor Who stories. Where do you think... I'll ask John Cena, as he's the guest, I'll ask him first. Where do you think it came?
I think... about... 112,
oh my god.
Remember the closest, we don't need the exact number to win the prize.
Yeah, okay, I think it's much higher.
Really?
So, I'm going to go with... 65. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen... It's a bit dramatic, but... it is 97,
ooh,
which places John Melville as the winner.
Congrats, happy Christmas.
Thank you.
Oh, this is tough. Although, who knows when we'll record the episode. So between number 98, The Androids of Tara, and between 96, The Ambassadors of Death, which is the next story, the next classic story we're going to be talking about. So forget that information. But John...
Okay.
Your prize awaits.
And like actual Christmas presents, it looks like it's been frayed a bit at the bottom, like somebody's had a peek.
No, it's just been in my bag with a bunch of other stuff.
It's quite a large plastic bit in front, which means it's a large character, I think.
Okay.
I think it could be a Dalek, but maybe it's too thin for Dalek.
Is it the Dalek with the handprint from Dalek?
Dalek,
or
could it be?
Or remember they had the... Was it Dalek Jast with the missing back panels? Remember they had that figure as well?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. This is what I've always hoped we'd never get.
John, what is it?
It's a Slovene.
Hooray! Of course.
There are those guys.
We should have known all of this is series.
Yes, series I one said it was a certain vintage. It's
with
maybe
dust,
a bit dusty.
With dust from 2000.
Oh my god. Five. So, if any of Mark's relatives are listening, he doesn't even bloody bother taking the presents out of the packaging. He couldn't give that much of a fuck.
I don't know why that was still in his packet. But it was. I was trying to find. I had an old Daypaul Tom Baker. Well, I say Tom Baker. Really, yeah. I didn't like it. I was going to bring along as well. But
if you have photos of these.
Yeah. So then, what's on the back? What figures are there on the back? So
the Mox of Balhoun.
The Mox. I still have a Mox of Balhoun.
I'm still waiting for the Mox of Balhoun to make a comeback.
Yeah. Maybe in Jodie's first episodes.
Do you remember when
Doctor Who had an exciting adventure with the Moxibalvin?
Do you remember when figures were actually sizable rather
than
these dinky fucking things? And they'll charge you £25 if you want a figure that size.
Oh well, congratulations, John.
Thank you.
A Christmas Carol. I guess this is on a larger, because I'm going to confess.
Let's just pretend.
I didn't do my homework. I mean, I remember it and I liked the episode. I just didn't immediately watch it just now. But I think this is going to be a larger conversation about Moffat's legacy.
Yeah.
And I'll confess, nobody told me.
I thought because you'd retweeted one of the tweets that you would have read it.
I didn't read that.
I'd gone, oh, they want me to watch the Christmas Carol as well. Okay, no problem.
I just if I'm tagged, I just
feel terrible because Lee said he wasn't going to come today because he hadn't had the time to watch Twice Upon a Time Again or the Christmas Carol. And look at you two.
Well, this just means you run with it, Mark. Yeah. You're always.
I remember bits of it. There was a title sequence. There was a pre-title sequence.
Well. I'm going to have to just fucking rely on
David
Tennant
was great in it.
Well, okay, let's open with the delicious listeners.
So, former contributor to the show and friend of the show, Des O'Gorman. I mean, this isn't really about the episode, but it's quite a nice little observation.
Great.
If it will fucking load up. Basically, Des, I can't.
Paraphrase, Des.
It won't load up, but I'm going to paraphrase you here.
Mark is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to hearing from Mark again. Mark is... he and his future wife are getting married, I believe, next year.
Oh, yeah.
I've not been invited
yet. Still waiting for the invite, guys. Yeah.
Thanks, Des. Cheers.
Yeah, Des.
But their first dance, I believe, is the Catherine Jenkins song at the end of this Christmas special.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is very nice. So.
Oh, yes. So he was telling me about it. So, yes. Yeah, so Des is also a comic, so I spend... we've launched Science Fair. If you're in Edinburgh, I know, listeners, none of you are.
I am. Hello. Tell me about it.
So in January, we are launching a monthly science fiction fantasy live panel show. We've done two already.
Am I allowed, John?
Yes. So, we've done two already called Science Fair. Actions as me as the host, and John Miller and Ian Campbell as team captains. We have another guest, and the last two have been Des. But yes, no. So Des, they're having like I think a Doctor Who themed wedding, or there's some contributing.
Okay,
I think they've got. Right. So they've got one. I think they're getting. It's a little cake decoration, which is a bride stealing a groom into the TARDIS, which sits on top of the cake. I think she's wearing a kind of Doctor Who-esque type of dress. Basically, they are the biggest. Fans of Star Wars, Doctor Who, all that kind of stuff. So, basically, I'm just pitching to get an invite here.
And I'm not pitching to get an invite when I say I hope you have a very lovely day. But if you do need anybody to just drink the bar dry and
fill up
make inappropriate comments at female relatives,
you can give him a Slovene.
There's a Slovene here going begging because John, ungrateful bastard, am I.
No, I love it, but I think Des is a better.
Hey, I'll have the Slovene. I'll take the Slovene home.
There's a sentence.
I'll take this.
Oh, didn't Captain Jack say that in the episode of Torchwood? I'll take the Slovene home.
Actual little teeth as well, but the actual work on this.
See, it's like just a pretty good sculpt, isn't it?
Oh my God.
You wouldn't get that nowadays.
Where are we? A Christmas Carol. Sorry.
Paul McAvoy on our Facebook page says, A Christmas Carol is absolutely perfect. No fighting hand pish, no robot Santas, the villain's human, and not a head in a box. Well, I'm not entirely sure who the head in the box is. Max Capricorn, maybe? Is that who he's referring to?
Or is it, what's his name? The blue-headed guy.
But he's not in any of the Christmas episodes, is he?
No, don't.
The plot, the atmosphere, the music, the performances, it's absolutely top-tier from start to finish.
Yes.
Which I kind of mostly agree with. And Gav Woods, Christmas Carol is still the most Christmassy episode to date. Flawless stuff. Smith completely owns the role from this point onwards, matching the mighty Gambin in every scene. Adam, our good friend Adam Smith...
he's the dead economist.
I'm not entirely sure what he means by this, because I, unlike you two, have watched it, but even I have not watched it in this level of detail. It's only costume wise, but I never did like the new outfit Matt has in the Christmas Carol. I was like, it's the same one, isn't it?
No, so he's got
a new jacket.
Yeah, he's got a different jacket.
Because he obviously comes through the chimney.
Yeah.
It's all sooty and all that.
Yeah.
Of course.
So is it a different.
Yeah, so it's not. So I think it's a different weave of tweed.
Oh, wow.
Which
wow.
makes it a bit more kind of 70s stark.
Okay. Well, because Adam,
it's definitely more defined stripes.
Yeah. Well, because this is what Adam was saying. He said, you know, the season 5 costume feels like it was thrown together, mm-hmm. but it looks like Amy took him to Top Man post season for that.
Yeah, I get that. That is dead on. That is dead on. That is funny. yes. It definitely looks
it's
more
like
stylized.
More like a costume and okay.
Yes.
Okay. Even Doctor does that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Question about lapels.
Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember thinking I liked the old jacket better.
I don't say that didn't really tell much of it. I'll have to.
I'll
have to look at the weaves later on.
Yes, is there the plaid on it?
That's a
anyway. So that's oh my god, that's how we're starting this thing. Okay, so A Christmas Carol. first thing about The Christmas Carol is, I think I would probably like to start with this, is that it's the one that my mum. So my mum used to love the David Tennant Christmas specials. Mm-hmm. She was never really a fan of any of the Stephen Moffat Christmas specials because, and she said, and it started here, it's Christmas Day. I don't understand why they have to be so sad
he
all
does
the time.
I was thinking this recently because I've obviously, in watching Capaldi again, I've watched Last Christmas, Husbands of River Song, and the Return of Dr. Mysterio.
Yeah.
And that one I'm not that keen on. But the other two, there is a real like melancholy and sadness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to kind of to look at that in terms of like the difference between the Christmas specials beforehand, which were very much like kind of bank holiday movie, like fun and adventure, and this, which is because the Christmas Carol, I mean, the first most obvious thing is that it's not visibly filmed on a Cardiff Street in August.
Yes.
It's like they've taken it indoors, they've filmed on a set. And
it's very muted blues and whites and colouring.
But it looks beautiful. It's like a Victorian street, but it's on an alien planet, and it all works very well. And I remember watching that when it first went out and thinking, oh, great, okay, it actually feels like Christmas.
Yes.
Which is kind of nice. You know, you don't get that very often with Doctor Who Christmas specials. You can play Slade all you like, but it's still August in Cardiff.
Oh, yeah, you remember in The Runaway Bride, where it's very obviously a summer's day.
Yeah.
Firstly, she's having her wedding on Christmas Day.
And everybody that's walking around is kind of just like in quite light jackets.
It's obviously Christmas Day in The Runaway Bride. That's hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, back to your mum.
You're right. It's just there is, there's a tinge of sadness that starts from the beginning, from a lot of Stephen Moffat's Christmas episodes, and also the palette of each of the colouring. It just always seems less. I think we've talked about it before, garish or 90s than the RTD era. It always seems like
it's something more stylized.
Yeah, so. It goes. If it can't necessarily be Christmas focused, then it is at least Christmas tones and colouring and stuff like that, which also gives a kind of, I guess. There's also, I think, a weird, you know, something like Voyage of the Damned has a massive cast. When you get to Moffat, it's always about small core casts. It also serves to make each story. I don't know, the best way I can find to describe it is a little more lonely.
Mm.
I think you find this most in, like, say, The Doctor or The Widow in the Wardrobe, where it is just, it's a lonely house in the middle of a forest. Presumably that is a budgetary thing.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I was thinking that Gareth Roberts, I sort of said something recently where he goes, you know, you can see the point at which Stephen Moffat, Doctor Who, stopped playing to the kids and started playing to people in American airport hotels.
Mm.
And I think you can see it in the Christmas specials as well, in the guest cast. It's not, oh, look, we've got Kylie Minogue. It's, oh, River Song's back. Or, oh, look, we've got Jenny and Vastra and Strax.
Yeah.
And it's all like bringing back characters from within the universe rather than these kind of show-stopping.
Yeah.
Because like with the Snowmen, it was never, oh look, we got Richard E. Grant and Ian McKellen. That was part of it. Yeah. But it was very much like, oh, you're going to meet the new companion, and you know, and that was kind of how they were promoting it.
Yeah.
Which I remember at the time thinking that's kind of weird, like Ian McKellen's in it.
Yeah. Or is it just the voice?
Well, yeah, but even then, it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I enjoyed it. Like, I really like. I liked that episode. Like, I did, and I was. I think Catherine Jenkins in it was as the star. As the star that you didn't suspect.
You've got Michael Gambon and Catherine Jenkins, so we're still in that period where this is about star casting. And actually, watching it this time around, I was like, God, it's actually quite nice to just have Matt by himself. Like, interacting with other characters. And
which is the first of a precedent where Amy and Rory are sidelined.
For their specials.
Yeah. So, well, they're stuck on a ship on their honeymoon.
Yeah, and dressed as Rory and Cassandra from the... all the Puss in Horses first of those ill-fated Christmas specials.
But, that's hilarious. Yeah, he's in his Roman garb. She's in the police... What was it? She wasn't a stripper. Of course she wasn't a stripper. What was that? A kissogram?
Kissogram,
for fuck's sake. Right, okay.
Yeah. Can't have strippers in Doctor Who.
Never. Where are kissograms as a thing? Is that a thing? Just asking for a friend.
Well, I mean, I don't know what was going on in the upper floor of the Last Chance Saloon in the Gunfighters, but yeah.
Well, there we are. Let's ask William Hartnell. He probably had a fucking hand in it, didn't he? Like misogynist, probably.
So sorry. Where were we? Yeah, so they're kind of sidelined, and you get to kind of just have the Doctor. And I guess the part of that is maybe a hangover from, because the Tennant specials were essentially him by himself.
Yeah.
And meeting like a guest cast.
Yeah, it wasn't until The Snowman that you had a meaningful contribution from who would be the other lead.
Yeah,
for the
that's
season.
True, actually. Yeah.
And even then, not playing the final iteration of that character.
That was Clara's first one, wasn't
it? Yeah. Well, sort of second one, because obviously she's in...
Yeah, she's in the Dalek.
The Dalek Asylum.
Until I've watched the Christmas specials many times.
Yeah. You're very quiet, John.
Well, he's kind of...
It's like you didn't know this conversation was going to happen.
It's almost like that, isn't it? It's also... I only watched the Christmas specials once. I think the one I've watched the most is Christmas in Beijing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just remember that being quite good fun. And after that, they just kind of... I watched on Christmas Day and think, oh, that was fine.
Yeah.
I seem to remember liking this one.
I think it is good. I think the idea of doing the kind of Dickens thing...
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone has to do it, don't they?
Everybody, the Muppets.
Sure. But in this sense, what you have is the Doctor plays all the ghosts.
Amy's one of the ghosts.
Yeah, but it's his time machine.
Although I was watching it, and it was like, you know, it's called The Christmas Carol, and you know, it's got a miserly character, and the Doctor's, you know, on the phone to Amy. And she's like, oh, I can't hear you. What's going on in the background? He's like, oh, it's a Christmas Carol. She goes, I can't hear you. What is it? He's like, oh, it's a Christmas Carol. And it seems to just go on forever until eventually goes, oh, a Christmas Carol, and then like the Murray Gold "I Am the Doctor" music starts playing. He's like, he's formulated a plan. It's all going to be okay.
Yeah,
and it's just
okay.
Like, Jesus, I'd forgotten that was in it because I thought he just kind of just goes.
Okay, I know what to do. And then let the audience work it out.
Yeah.
Like, oh no. The fiction itself has to tell the Doctor to do it
because everybody's had a very big meal and they need to have their hands held.
Yes. Oh my God, how big was the meal?
This, Ben, there's never any leftovers at my house.
The idea of the turkey sandwich in my house is no, there's nothing left to go in the bread.
it's
consumed there.
It's all gone.
Okay, so let's expand it out because I think focusing on
expand out this discussion to a show that neither of us have seen.
After talking about big Christmas dinners,
I remember bits with people in a
so that's the thing. Like, having not seen it for quite a while, there are some great moments to remember. The flying shark.
I've forgotten that bit.
Was that a Radio Times cover? I mean, not the shark, but was the Radio Times cover that year, not the Christmas one, but like, you know, the one before Christmas, was it not like Matt Smith, Catherine Jenkins, and Michael Gambon in a
standing by the fireplace, was it?
No, I think they were like in the sleigh.
Well, I found a photo the other day when I was cleaning out the attic, actually. A lot of attic.
There's a lot of attic.
And I found a lot of Doctor Who Adventures magazines to bin. Sorry, give to charity. But one of the photos was of David Tennant on sitting on the edge of the TARDIS, which was tied to the reindeer. Yeah. Do you remember that, those adverts?
Yes, yeah, just before he...
Yeah, because he was everywhere that Christmas,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He's on QI, and he did a few other things, I think.
Never mind the Buzzcocks.
Probably Graham Foster. Yeah.
Can you stop trying to bring it back to RTD, mate? This is about Moffat, you Moffat hater.
Sorry. Anyway, sharks.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Okay, here's a. Let's expand it out so that it's a wider conversation about Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, sure.
He's the other person, apart from Murray Gold as well.
Yeah, yes.
Who's leaving? The one that we know of, we don't know.
Well, who else is leaving?
Also, that Crystal.
She's going. What do you
from
mean?
From the.
Yeah, I heard they were like revamping that or even getting rid of it altogether. But.
Oh really? Okay.
She's not real. Well, I think this is
can't have two successful women fronting things.
No, yeah.
Can't do that.
Oh no, I meant
she's
the show.
Replaced her. Ben, hang on. If the new female Doctor has like Bradley Walsh as a companion,
yeah.
If Crystal D's leaving the fan show, I think you and I are over the show.
Oh my god, fucking curmudgeonly old assholes. I didn't get it. I've always gone on fucking yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Stephen Moffat as a showrunner.
And Christmas.
And Christmas.
Because I think the Christmas specials are always quite a good indicator of... Because I think, you know, with Russell T, the Christmas specials, the, like I said, big sort of movies, and he's all about that kind of... Oh, it's just like, it's entertainment, and blah, blah, blah. Stephen Moffat, I think there is... Because I remember Russell T, a really great interview with Russell T, where he talks about, you know, you watch these Christmas specials and of TV shows, and... There's no Christmas in them. It's like it's, you know, it's Hyacinth Bouquet on the QE2 or like, you know, Del and Rodney going off to Margate. Like, there's nothing to do with Christmas. Yeah. And he was always kind of very much filming it in August. But I think with Stephen Moffat, there's certainly something where he seems to really take that kind of, not so much necessarily Christmas and like the sort of the tinsel and the and Slade and all that kind of thing. But that kind of slightly melancholy feeling you get at the end of a year. And I think that's why with his two Doctors, the regeneration's taking place at Christmas. Because it kind of makes sense in a way, because it's kind of about putting to rest everything that's kind of gone on the previous year, kind of looking to the future. And so there's something in that, and I don't know what you guys think about that, but I feel like his own personal kind of feeling about that time of year very much infects is maybe the wrong word, but inflects certainly his kind of Christmas specials. There is that kind of sadness that's obviously put your mum off Doctor Who for the past couple of years.
Yeah, it's not this is so. I think RTD's Christmases were the perfect excitement television. They bore you back up.
Yeah,
and there's enough. Sadness balanced out with comedy, moments of action, great moments of charm. Whereas there's just something, as you said at the start, quite melancholic all the way through. And that's the feeling that you leave before you hit EastEnders.
Yeah.
Which then absolutely panels you in the face with some sort of, you know, urban brutality.
Yeah, two women falling off the roof of a pub.
No, I didn't see that.
Jesus.
But even with stuff like that, it is so, I guess, so visceral and immediately exciting. But there's just something quite poetically sad about Stephen Moffat's Christmas specials. They are all very... there's a deep sadness.
But yeah, because, I mean, with A Christmas Carol, the whole thing is that what it is that actually inevitably turns Kazran Sardik into the Kazran Sardik that won't save 4,400 people crashing in a spaceship is that Catherine Jenkins' character only has one Christmas left because she's very ill, and so she's been kind of kept in this
cryogenic
storage for however many days.
Yeah,
and each time they bring her out, like a day
she loses a day.
So I mean, even that's just like this idea that, you know, oh well, you know, Christmas could be the last time you see your granddad, like to the kids at home.
Yeah.
there's something, and
every Christmas is
last Christmas. Yeah, every Christmas is last Christmas, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And part of me is just like, what happened to your Christmas, Stephen?
Yes.
Did it involve a barn? Like, it's weird. It's weird to just, you can kind of just watch, I think you can watch a Stephen Moffat Doctor Who, and there's just, in a similar way to Douglas, I think he's the closest to Douglas Adams. I think a lot of people say Robert Holmes, but I think the closest to Douglas Adams we get, in that he reuses a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And is incredibly ambitious, but doesn't always pull it off. I think that, I mean, I really like A Christmas Carol, and I didn't like it at the time. I remember watching it and going, oh, it was like fucking sharks. But actually watching it,
well, it's no everybody in the entire world is the master. So,
but this time around I was like, this is really good. Like, it's really enjoyable. I love little bits, like I love the Matt Smith's entrance is coming down the chimney.
Yeah,
that's really funny. And I think you can kind of imagine the 11th Doctor as this kind of quirky, slightly irritating but slightly lovable,
yeah,
idiot would do.
Your best buffoon pal.
Yeah, your best buffoon pal. The funniest guy you could meet. That's the 10th Doctor, sorry, yeah. I apologize. So that's really good. But then also the bit where he kind of walks into the projector screen.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's beautifully done, because he kind of walks through it, because there's a door, and he kind of goes out the door, and then the TARDIS dematerialises, like, up, like, yeah, above the... That's great.
Yeah.
There's some really, just really lovely directorial flourishes.
Watched it now.
Yes.
Yeah. I should
stop and watch it now.
Then come back. Okay, we'll see you in a minute. We're back. Oh my god, that week, Mark, you were right. All of that was the fucking holy.
That bit with the projector.
Yeah.
Oh, darkness. I will never doubt you.
I'll tell you, boys. But there, I mean, there's stuff in it which is also incredibly dark. The abusive father.
Yes.
So Sarnik's father, like, hits him. And you don't see it, obviously, because that would be quite dark. For it. It's not EastEnders Christmas Day. Yeah. But, you know, it's still pretty visceral. It's like, you know, you see the hand, and then it cuts back to the older Michael Gambin, like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's in Doctor Who. It's, like, quite grown-up stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's the darkest element, the fact that the Doctor goes, never change history, apart from when I want to get what I want.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I'll completely change the guy's timeline.
There is some very muddy morality.
Yeah, now I can understand there are a number of lives at stake.
Yeah. A substantial number of lives at stake.
Well, yes, but it's again a thing of, is there a difference if Amy and Rory hadn't been on that ship? Would he be more willing to do that, or accepting of,
yeah,
doing that?
Yeah, that's very true.
Because it does seem like there's a lot of times, particularly within Moffat's Doctor Who, that he's roused to action because it directly affects him or a friend.
Yeah.
Someone he's got a duty of care to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that started a cracking conversation.
No, I don't know how to voice my reply to that, because you are right. But I think that reaches that kind of crescendo with Heaven Sent.
Yeah.
Not,
yeah,
Heaven Sent, Hellbent.
Yeah.
Where it is like, you know, well, actually, sometimes these sort of doctor-companion relationships are quite toxic, and he's, yeah, willing to do whatever he can to save somebody's life.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, yeah, he kind of... And actually, would poor Abigail have lived longer if he hadn't got involved? Because he lets her out to sing to the shark.
Yeah.
So presumably on that little data thing that kind of comes up, it's, I don't know, she's like, oh, I'm an opera singer.
Yeah.
I'm a Welsh opera singer in Space Wales.
Yeah.
Because I love the fact that her family are all Welsh as well.
Yes. It's, yeah.
It's a nice touch. Yeah, it's just Space Welsh people.
Yeah, when they expand into space, they still stick to their own.
Yeah.
Am I right? Brexit space.
Brexit space.
That'll be next year's Christmas special. Yeah. So Brexit.
Space Brexit.
Well, will there be a Christmas special? I mean, have we watched the last Doctor Who Christmas special? There's no talk of it.
No.
It's not been confirmed. I suppose, do the BBC want to see, because it's filming now, the new series is filming now, do the BBC want to see what it looks like before they commit to something? Or has Chris Chibnall went, nah, I don't want to.
Yeah, he just wants to do 10 episodes, and maybe that's
it. Well, I'd say maybe it is, if it is self-contained season, yeah. It's a bit Broadchurchy, then but maybe it is still just self-contained and it doesn't lend itself to having a Christmas special. Who knows?
But that seems like quite a either a vote of no confidence by the BBC, or seems quite a brave move from the showrunner to go, like you said at the start, this doesn't live here anymore. It's not a Christmas thing.
And I'm kind of just like, would I miss it on Christmas Day?
Yes. TV was fucking appalling.
It was pretty bad.
So the only thing I looked forward to, televisual wise, was Doctor Who. Okay, I mean, I think I keep trying to steer it towards people trying to make statements about Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, no, we okay, well, let's do that.
This is too much to unpack,
well,
really.
And I mean, that's something we will be returning to if we do more of these.
My point would basically be, I'm glad he's gone. I think he overstayed his welcome.
I think he was persuaded to stay. He was the old TNT adage.
Yeah, it's like it.
But, I don't know if that fits in.
I think that bit
could go in. So I guess it's interesting going back to, we all have mutual friends, and I guess you are in contact with them more than we are. But there is a kind of older fandom which has really taken against New Who, particularly during Stephen Moffat's reign. Do you have more of an insight on that? Because you maybe straddle those two friendship groups.
Straddling.
And maybe have more information, because I think
the whole thing about Stephen Moffat, the big thing was the whole it's too confusing, and I think that's never quite gone away. I think that was when people started, I certainly started to get a little bit alienated from the programme, I suppose, because there was a lot of stuff went in his first year or two, and it was all the whole just very confusing stuff about timelines and things. And then I think I've heard you guys talk about it, like, well, it's not that confusing.
Yeah.
Have you said that before? Because you're looking
possibly,
at me as if
possibly,
I don't think it's that
possibly.
Confusing. But I seem to remember it being, and if you're only watching it once, which is what I tend to do, there's a lot of the episodes that I've just never wanted to go back to. I've watched them once and then couldn't even tell you the episode, the titles.
With Doctor Who, I kind of go along with it, and I think I can mostly follow it, and it's all fine, and I enjoy it. And with Stephen Moffat stuff, I think he's done some amazing things over the course of the, which I'll come back to in a minute. But when I watch Sherlock, I'm like you. I'm like, oh, this is just bollocks. That's where I go, oh, I can see how Stephen Moffat can be an annoying writer for people. Like, just watching that programme, I'm like, this is bollocks. I just want to see Sherlock Holmes, like, meet people, solve a mystery, do a thing. But it's like, he just sits there in his house, and it's like, oh, well, of course. I went back and I did all this kind of thing. And then that meant that
I think Moffat is very clever, but he fakes. I can't give a really good example of this in Doctor Who, unfortunately, and I wish I could, because it would make my point much better. But there's an episode of Sherlock, the one where Watson gets married.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's stuff going on in there where, and I feel like maybe I said this the last podcast, but I've certainly said this before, because it's annoyed me quite a lot, where he fakes the history and the friendship of Sherlock and Watson, because you've only ever had about six episodes up to that point or something.
Yeah.
Six or nine, I'm not sure. But he, you know, he says, oh, you know, I'm here for my friend, and we had this adventure and this happened, and it does little flashbacks. Mm-hmm. All these little sequences and things happening. You know, oh, that's an adventure we didn't see.
Yeah.
And that's the one we didn't see, and that's one that didn't ever happen. But it did happen in the universe of the series.
Yeah.
So he makes up, so the characters have more of a feeling of who they are than the viewers do. And it just makes me feel very uneasy with it. It's like, that didn't actually happen.
There's a lot of showing rather than telling.
A lot of that,
yeah.
And there's bits of that in Doctor Who. I just can't give lots of examples.
Telling rather than showing is what I meant.
Yeah.
But
that's a bit sneaky. It's a bit, he cheats a lot, I think. I mean, I do love the Day of the Doctor, but
there's
a few of his episodes that I do love, but just that annoys me a bit, Moffat, and I think he has done it in Doctor Who. But I just can't get
So yeah, so I completely understand that. I think I've said this before in some season kind of roundups that we did. is that I never really got the sense that Clara and Danny were a proper
relationship. Don't get me fucking started.
Because we'd never seen any of...
He did something with some of that, didn't he? Little flashbacks.
Yeah.
So there's little flashbacks, but you never got like the key, tender, private, un-Dr. Sullied moments.
No.
You never saw them on dates. You never saw them just chilling out watching the TV. You never saw them like going on a holiday. You never saw the moments that are actually important to our relationship. So then when she is at the end of the series and goes, I love you, and goes batshit crazy that he died.
Yeah.
Like, I don't buy that you have gotten to this point. No. Because you just are led to believe that meaningful moments have happened between the two Saturdays.
Yeah,
and the thing
that's sense, yeah, yeah.
No, that's very true. And I mean, my main issue with Series 8, which has a lot of my sort of favourite recent Doctor Who, is the Danny Pink character.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's like it could have been like a new Ian Chesterton and Barbara Wright. For like, you know, for like a new generation. But what it is it's just another jealous fucking boyfriend.
Well, I also think that Samuel Anderson is terrible in that role.
Yeah, he's and
he's so understated to the point of indolence. It's just
it's terrible. And the thing is that I don't know what that character is, and maybe that is a problem with Stephen Moffat's writing compared to Russell T. Davis's writing, is that he does seem to understand character and he does seem to be like, well, that's who this character is. Whereas Moffat's obviously gone, he's a soldier and he's a bit traumatised from a thing. And
So RTD cares about every character he puts on screen. Moffat, I think, cares.
It's the Doctor and companion and that's it.
Absolutely in love with two characters and nobody else. That's why you go from an early revival of Doctor Who where it's family orientated and Camille Kadoori is as important as actual the main characters, and then you get the time of the Doctor, I keep forgetting that we start with Clara's dad and Gran at Christmas dinner. It's like that's there. I'm like, she's got pets. Her pets are still alive.
And the other thing is that people, well, after the Christmas special, after Twice Upon a Time, when the Doctor says, you know, be kind, they go, oh, well, actually, and then they, like, pull up that clip from Death in Heaven. No, not Death in Heaven. Dark Water.
Yeah.
And so Clara's, like, sort of taking the TARDIS to, like, a volcano, and she's, like, threatening the Doctor, and she goes, Danny Pink is dead, and the Doctor goes, and?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, see, he's not very kind, is he?
Yeah.
And then, actually, if you let that clip play out, it's him going... And
what do you want?
Like, why is that brought us to this point? Like, what is it you're trying to say? He's trying to understand the situation. And the problem is, I think, I don't give a shit about Danny Pink.
Yeah.
And that is a problem with the writing. Mickey Smith. I hate how the Ninth Doctor treats Mickey Smith.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's the same thing, but the problem is, I care about that. When the 12th Doctor's mean to Danny Pink, I'm like, well, actually, he's not very nice to the Doctor either. He's not even trying to get to know the guy.
Yeah.
Like, he just sees him as this kind of, and this whole like blood soaked general and doctor of war, and it's not the doctor.
Yeah.
Another thing you were saying, you were asking about what do maybe older fans think about it. I think that one of the big things I've heard, and I've probably said myself, is the thing around how the stories, it feels like the stories have become more just about the Doctor in the Moffat era, and the Doctor rather than the people he's helping. So it's all about, this is where you get stuff like the trends are lower and all these sorts of things, and it's all about the Doctor's mythology and his death and, you know, where he's going, and it's all, and whereas I always think, looking back to classic Who and even probably a lot of RTD stuff, it's more about the people he's helping. You know, the Doctor, just like a traditional story, the Doctor arrives, there's something happening, the Doctor arrives, he helps out, saves the day, and off he goes.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of them, in the last few years, it feels like it's just been about more stress on the Doctor, and more soul-searching, and all that stuff about, am I a good man? It's like, well, yes, I think you are. You probably are a good man. You know, I didn't ever sort of stop to think, where are you? I realised they were doing something probably with the War Doctor as well, and the Doctor's had a more tortured background than we ever saw. Which again, you could almost say, I actually do think it's quite clever the way he brought the War Doctor into it. But you could say, I was going to say, could you say Moffat's cheating a bit there? But I don't think he is, because he's just come up with a convenient way to plug some.
But
it's just more about that stuff. Is all about, so the Doctor that we you know, should all the stories be about the Doctor or should it be about people he's helping? Yeah, I've not enjoyed that, and I'd like to get away from that and just back to the Doctor. Okay, it's going to have to be a bit about the Doctor. But, but is that in modern television? I don't know. Is it a Moffat thing, or is it just
this
telly?
Is the thing. I think that's what it is. I think because if you actually look at Doctor Who as it is now, it has a huge fan base like across the world. And there's people just finding it on Netflix. And I did a thing on it, Boxing Day, where I went on YouTube and I just found all these like Doctor Who reaction videos, and it's predominantly sort of people in their sort of like early 20s, like just watching clips of Doctor Who and like bawling their eyes out and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think there's something about I think the three of us, I think I'm not, I don't think I'm sort of generalising, but I think we all are attracted to Doctor Who because of the adventure serial and the kind of the idea of like him kind of turning up and some creepy stuff is going on or some space stuff's going on or whatever, and he solves that and he goes on to the next adventure, and it's all about the exploration like we discussed earlier on. But I do think that Stephen Moffat as a writer has very much written a Doctor Who for this sort of Netflix long form drama generation that is all about like, oh, we care about this character, well, like, how does this character tick? You know, like they really respond to the character, whereas I think growing up watching Doctor Who, I loved the Doctor, but I would get excited if like, you know, like watching the Deadly Assassin or something, say, like, ooh, it's like the planet he's from. But if it comes down to like the brass tacks, it's like, no, I just quite like the different stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that people are really kind of drawn to the character now in a way, certainly maybe not in the UK, and that's why I think it's maybe a good idea to move it from Saturday, because it no longer feels like a Saturday night programme. It feels like a long form TV show that maybe sits somewhere else on the TV schedule, which is a risk, but I do think that's kind of where it is at the moment.
So, yeah, I mean, I certainly agree. I certainly agree with that. One of my favourite things in Doctor Who magazines was his body of work, or the production notes column, because it's very apparent. And after reading this, one of the first things I would ever read in Doctor Who magazine, because it was obvious that he as a person actually in love with the Doctor, but he's obviously the writer who has spent the most time obsessing over the back catalogue, the history of Doctor Who, trying to make it all work in his head as one cohesive character, because essentially with classic Doctor Who, you could watch any Doctor in any order, and it doesn't really feel like if you watch Trout and then watch McCoy that you have much of a leap, particularly. But yeah, I just like, he would always, when I read that production note, it would always instill me with a passion. I'd go like, yes, I'm absolutely on board with what you're doing here. This is great. Absolutely pursue that. But then I think there's just something in the actual materialisation of it to the screen, which leaves something to be desired a little. I don't quite know. But I guess my thoughts are not fully formed here, because as you said, we'll hopefully be coming back to a lot of this as a discussion as we revisit a lot more stuff. I don't know. You're looking at your watch there. Do you want to go? Do you want to go now?
No, I wanted more drinks. I always do.
So, should we close it up? I think what we've done is we've touched upon something which is going to be the catalyst for more conversations in future Moffat era geared. Because as we're winding up the Moffat era in real life, we still have a lot of it to go on the rest of the time.
Yes, so, Christ, we do.
This is where we're going to be living for the next recordings.
And I mean, I don't want to, it sounds like we've been like really kind of hard on the guy, but I know that you and I are both quite big fans of him. Really.
So yeah, I'm absolutely a big fan, but I cannot discount people who, like yourself, John, who kind of left a little cold because I appreciate your opinion and so many other things. And I know you're not just like a duvet-hugging, mouth-breathing kind of, it was shit after the Reign of Terror, I stopped watching it, you know. Like,
it was shit when Ian and Barbara left.
Yeah, that kind of. So there's obviously something that needs to be generally addressed as opposed to just shut up.
Can I leave us with a message of hope?
Yes.
So joy to the world. I mean, that's a Christmas name, presumably. At Dr. Joy P on Twitter.
No, it's Twitter.
Okay. Tweeted us with my 9-year-old son, with a doctor-worthy grin, after twice upon a time, says, the doctor's a girl now, instead of a boy. And I think he's happy about it. Well, she, now. Because he hasn't been the girl, like, forever. Literally forever. That's kind of nice, isn't it? And also, on the subject of children taken to the new doctor, Gordon Barr on Twitter said, it's a shame to lose Peter Capaldi just as he nailed how to play the role, but excited about Jodie. My 3-year-old girl is already asking why I don't have a Lady Doctor Who Lego minifig of her, based on pictures of DWM. Get on it, Gordon. That's why they announce these things so early and give us these promotional shots so early, so you can make a little Lego figure.
Yeah.
I think that's quite funny that we called him Capaldi, but we call her Jodie.
Yeah. Oh, are we horrible patriarchy misogynists?
Yeah. Is there something wrong there? Is there something right there?
No, it's because I don't want people to think I'm talking about David Whittaker.
Ah, former script editor.
Okay, from now on I'm going to refer to David Whittaker as David and Jodie Whittaker as Whittaker. That's what I'll do, just to... But you earlier on, I mean, this one's there, but earlier on, there was a masterclass in gender pronouns from you where you were like, yeah, I will miss him, she will be great, and they will be fantastic. Okay. Yeah, I was just like, ooh, that's good.
Well,
that's good. And like,
well, that's
the three levels of.
Keep the fucking snowflakes happy.
By the way, when's the cleaner coming in here, Ben? It's needs a bit of dust. When's she here? Joking.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We hope to make this the first in many, rather than rare appearance every now and again with your old crazy uncles. We will be back soon.
Yeah, I thought that we're not going to tell you what we're going to do, because God only knows.
Yeah, but we
will. But there's some episodes that have been recorded.
But as they finished Twice Upon a Time,
yeah.
To be continued.
Yes.
Is how we're going to end up. I have been Ben. Thank you very much to our guest, John Melville.
Thanks for having me.
I have been Mark. And incidentally, a Happy New Year to all of you at home.